Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's rock and roll. It's time for your host of the Advanced Analytics Podcast. It's Paul Williams.
Well, one of the hosts. It's a joint. We joint host.
Oh, last week you were the host.
I was one of the hosts.
Last week we were rival hosts.
Yeah, this week we're joint hosts.
Okay, together. Well, let's join, introduce the show. Ladies and gentlemen.
Gentlemen.
It's time
for
Advanced Analytics. How are you?
A little sick, so apologies if I sound nasal.
You're performing in London this week. Is that exciting?
Very exciting, yeah.
So now if you do a show in New Zealand, you can say direct from London. That's quite exciting, eh?
Yeah, this is a world tour because I'm doing London and then New York.
Are you going to do a New York gig?
Yeah, I'm doing London and New York world tour.
Wow.
I'm going to get shirts made.
That's pretty big. Any podcast listeners in London or New York, I guess, go on Paul's Twitter. Like, how do they find out about these great gigs?
Well, this podcast right now.
Okay, well, where are they? Are they in small bars? Where are they?
Oh, the best venues. London one's at a place called 93 Feet East in Shoreditch.
Yeah.
On Thursday night, aka election night.
That's a weird night to book it. I guess that's why the bar
was
free.
No, the Queen, that's why they brought me. The Queen flew me over. she could tell it was a tense time.
Yeah.
And she thought I'd bring a lot of joy.
Yeah.
And then the New York show is at the Mercury Lounge.
Ooh.
One of my favorite bands of all time, The Strokes, kind of started out at the Mercury Lounge. Other notable names to play there. Oh, just Ed Sheeran, Sam Smith, Katy Perry.
Why have all these people played there, and how did you get a gig there? Is there like two rooms?
I'm pretty sure Weeze. Wait, is it Weeze? No. Who's not Weeze? What? Not Weezer. Who's the band who sing Teenage Dirtbag?
Wheatus.
Wheatus.
Weezer is like a legendary band. Wheatus is a one-hit wonder who sings Teenage Dirtbag.
It's a hell of a song. There's a video of them playing it there, possibly for the first time. So it's crazy.
Well, check out Paul's show in London and New York as part of his world tour. What a strange tour. You're not doing New Zealand on the tour.
In case you didn't realize, New Zealand is a very weird country.
No, but it's where you're from and where most of your fans are probably based.
Yeah, but if you're doing a world tour, you're not going, oh, I'm doing all the hot spots. London, New York, Whakatane.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Okay.
Most people skip New Zealand probably on their tour.
It's time. No, that's not true. Everyone comes. We always get the last gig. Do you know who I loved? I saw this week, Carly Rae Jepsen, gig of the year.
Yeah, right.
Who was your gig of the year, music or comedy?
Music or comedy?
Yeah. Just like a night out that you had different. That was like amazing.
Those are very different. I mean, Vampire Weekend at Madison Square Garden was pretty good.
And that was like your birthday spectacular as well, eh?
That was my birthday spectacular. The show went for about 12 hours, which I loved as a fan. Yeah, they played literally 1,000 songs. It was actually crazy. Like, they were taking requests and then just playing, like, they'd get, like, quite a niche request and they'd play the whole song and then they'd even, like, blend it into, like, a cover of some other song. And I was like, it's crazy to learn every song and then also learn other songs to blend into it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was,
they're talented, man.
It was awesome.
Well, you're probably doing a 4-hour show and your show in London this week.
No, I have got some special guests.
Who are your special guests? That's interesting.
Oh, no.
Or you can't tell me.
Christopher Bliss.
Oh, sick.
He's a British author. And then I have a friend, Mae Martin, who does comedy. And she texted me just a photo of her house saying, you should come over sometime. And there were lots of guitars.
Yeah.
This is just like 2 days ago. And I was like, do you play the guitar? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, would you come and play a song at my show, accompany me on the guitar? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, the song's called this, and I'll send you the chords. And then she was like, I already know it. And I was like, what? And then she was like, I was like, oh, yeah, don't worry about the guitar solo. We can stop it before then. She was like, I know the solo as well. And I was like,
wow. Oh, that makes me feel warm in my brain. That's awesome.
Yeah, we haven't practiced yet.
I can't wait to. After that inspirational story, I can't wait to see your performance as you sing out of tune to her horrific guitar as she's just learning and like barely hitting the notes. No. Oh, man, that's a gig to see. Mae Martin, comedy legend. Oh, Christopher Bliss. I don't know him personally, but I've heard great things. And what a name as well.
I've got a third guy, Johnny White, who I just met like a week ago at someone's birthday.
I love how everyone in the gig is just people you met a week ago. It's great.
No, I've known Mae for years, but yeah, this guy I just met a few weeks ago.
That's good. You can say at the gig, you know, bring it up to friend, to the stage now, an old friend, and you won't be lying.
Yes, but Johnny White.
Wait, you said his name was Donnie White before.
No, Johnny.
Okay.
I'm a bit sick. But Johnny White, really, he I was definitely getting like a muso vibe from him because he does comedy, but then, yeah, turns out he does music, but then he sent me one of his tracks on SoundCloud and it was fire. And I was like, but basically I'd already invited him to come do something just like off his vibe. I didn't really know anything.
Wow.
And anyway, he sent me a song. It was awesome. But then I was like, would you be able to do this live? And he kind of said no, because he thought the vocals were too kind of synthesized. But then he was like, I'll do a poem I've written about Godzilla or something. So he's going to do that.
Wait, so you got him on the strength of his SoundCloud raps and
not raps.
Oh, songs. Like, sorry. I've never heard of someone on SoundCloud that's not rapping. So you got him on his SoundCloud music and then you're like, can you do the song? I love it. And he's like, no, but I can read a poem about Godzilla. And you're like, choice.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Oh, man, I'm jealous I can't
come
to the gig.
I need to get some more guests for New York, though, because currently the guests there, like, there's not a lot happening, but I'll find some.
Can I recommend a New York native who's well-known for tinkling the ivories in New York, Billy Joel?
Possibly. I don't know if he's the right vibe.
No, he's good, man. Like, he plays New York Madison Square Garden every month, and he sells out. So, like, he would be really good for ticket sales, I reckon.
No, I don't know if he's the right vibe.
Give him a text, man. At least try and see if Billy Joel wants to play. That's what I'm saying. Like you don't want to die wondering and going, any regrets, Paul? And you're like, oh, I wish Billy Joel had played at my gig in New York City on my world tour.
Yeah.
Good point, eh?
Possibly.
Listen to me, I'm wise. And I've got some good basketball takes. So it's time. Yeah, whenever I'm doing some good chat, you always tell me, shall we move on?
No, we've just been talking about it for a long time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm interested, and I'm
the
me.
Podcast. We're about 5 minutes in, and there's been no mention of basketball almost. We talked about Madison Square Garden, but as a music concert.
I played the Week in Review sting. Can you not hear that?
I didn't hear it, no.
You talked over it again. One more time. Week in Review. Nice. This week.
Huge week.
Oh, yeah, sorry, you're the host.
Huge week in the NBA this year.
This week.
Chris Paul and Shirtgate. LeBron James and Sockgate.
Oh, these are
Carmelo
such crap scandals.
Anthony, Player of the Week gate.
Oh, yeah.
David Fizdale, firing gate. A lot of scandals. What have you got to add?
I like Kyle Lowry trying to fight a guy in the crowd at Philly.
Oh, yeah, and telling him his address. I tried to find that address. I couldn't find it.
Oh, it's so funny, bro. So let me explain this to you. As a comedian, you're not supposed to start stories with "so funny, bro," so I've already oversold it. But the story, for people who don't know, is a journalist tweeted, Kyle Lowry exiting the tunnel after a loss in Philadelphia responds to a heckling fan, come see me, about 7 times. Restrained by a teammate, he puts lightly, like it wasn't too serious, and he said, I live at 20th and Lee, come see me.
I thought it said Lee High.
Oh, Lehigh. Sorry, I read it wrong. Okay.
Right.
I like how you remit as if that detail is at all important to the story.
What is when I was trying to find where he lived and I couldn't find it, and I was like, did he give a fake address? What's going on?
No. So, like, and people are like, that's crazy if he still lives at 20th and Lehigh, because that's right at the edge of these are the names of the suburbs it's on the edge of: Strawberry Mansion and Nicetown.
Nicetown.
Like, nice.
That sounds like an unreal place.
Yes, I know. It sounds like a place that Super Mario would go to in Super Mario World or something like that. You know how there's that area in Auckland. It's a depressing area near the race course, but like the
Peach Parade.
The roads are called Peach Parade and Ladies Mile, and you're like, what is this magical land? Well, it's not that magical. Turns out it's the same for Strawberry Mansion and Nicetown in Philadelphia. They're two of the worst and most not nice, according to people on Reddit, parts of North Philadelphia. The joke in Philadelphia being the nicer the suburb sounds, the scarier it is. And when I did a Google map research, it was quite a rough neighborhood. But then a Raptors fan, who you can't verify it, but like they might know, said that's actually his childhood address, lol, which is 20th and Lee. And then if you do a Google Street View search, the main address he says is actually just like a kind of major intersection with a park on one side, some sort of school building or something on the other side. But then on the one corner there is like a, you know, like some sort of apartment house thing. And then if you go down the street a little bit, there is an all red house with a kid sitting outside on the Google Street View in a Raptors Lowry t-shirt. And also, the house is painted like Raptors red, and it makes you think that he owns his childhood house and probably knows or has family living there.
Wow.
That guy should go to that address just to see Kyle Lowry, and when you got there, go like, hey, man, I'm sorry for heckling you.
This reminds me, years ago, a few years back, Trevor Ariza got into a Twitter argument and then was like, we need to meet up and fight.
Yeah.
It was quite funny.
It's really interesting because if there's one thing that a lot of sport has taught me and has been a good thing is I've got quite good at losing. Like when my basketball career ended, too soon, RIP, I got into comedy, and comedy was the craziest thing because I was with all these like drama nerds or whoever they were in the competitions, and only one person could win out of 30 people. And what I noticed is when people would lose, they would take it really badly. Like people would stop talking.
Yeah, right.
People would storm out. It would be really, you'd think you'd go for a drink afterwards or have a bit of a, like a, you know, like a hoorah about how great the competition was. But no, it would be tense as hell. And I realized that sport had taught me one valuable lesson, which was, how to take a loss. And it's just weird. Obviously, Kyle Lowry has taken a lot less losses than me, and he's the defending NBA champion. But you think now he would be kind of used to just like, you know, getting heckled by fans as you lose in away games in the NBA, because he must have done it hundreds of times.
Yeah, I don't reckon.
You don't reckon? It doesn't get any easier?
No. Well, I reckon to get to the NBA, you got to be pretty competitive.
Yeah, but then at the same time, you realize like on to the next one. Like the Raptors lose this game in Philly.
They should lose. Like
Philly's
that,
a good team.
They're not the guys you want on your team, I think.
Okay, so you're saying like maybe the Sacramento Kings are doing that right now. Like they're like, oh, well, you win some, you lose some. But
I don't know. I'd say like Andrew Wiggins for years has been a bit probably like that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But at the same time, in life, you can only do your best. And you go crazy if you're like, think about the amount of criticism that Kyle Lowry, you hate him. Imagine if he listened to this podcast, he'd want to punch himself in the face. Like, he gets so much criticism. You hated him last year in doing the playoffs.
He's the face of my fantasy team.
This is so funny. Yeah, you turned a U-turn there. Last year, if you got the audio, you hated Kyle Lowry.
No. Yes, but you hate to play against him. If he was on the Magic, I'd love him. He'd be my favorite player.
I don't love him. Like, it's quite embarrassing. He flops. He complains to the ref. You know, quite. I don't think he's as bad as other players, but he does. He's a chirpy little point guard.
I think you can't. Yeah.
You hated him last year, though. You hated him. Remember when the Magic lost?
We were playing against him in the playoffs, and it was a howl. It was absolute howl.
Anyway, it just seems kind of a bit bleak on his part. I thought I was going to have to take the other position because you'd be like, "What? Kyle Lowry's such a douche." But like, if you're getting into arguments with fans after games and saying, come to my childhood house, red flag.
On the subject of douchery,
yeah,
LeBron James walking on the court in his socks and then going off at the Jazz commentators. Can we talk about this? Did you see it?
Yeah, I didn't care too much about it, to be honest. But
reading his Instagram post.
Tell me about your boiled blood for a start.
What?
So he won the game. He took his shoes off, which is like a...
It was a blowout game.
It's a universal NBA sign of disrespect when you take your shoes off. You're like, I'm not coming back.
Before the game finishes, yes.
I'll never forget, at high school, kids used to always take their shoes off in high school, and then the other team would make a couple of threes and come roaring back, and then you'd all of a sudden have to lace up your sneakers again. The funniest thing. Right. But he didn't have to do that. They had a good win on the road at Utah. It was kind of like two good wins in a row for them because they beat Denver the night before. And so he took his shoes off, fine, right?
Yes. And then there's a position where he walks what I would describe way too far out onto the court.
Yeah.
He was literally basically blocking a guy in the corner who was spotting up for a three.
Yeah.
He walks very far out, kind of like celebrating or like whatever. And then the commentator was just like, what are you doing? Called him out for it. Rightly so. It was obnoxious
behavior. What was he celebrating? Like a three or a dunk or something?
Yeah, I don't know. Just like they were up big and they were passing. Like someone was maybe shooting a three, and you know how like they'll walk with their hands up in the air or something like that.
So who was he blocking? Was he blocking a player on the Lakers who was spotting up in the corner?
I don't know. I can't remember.
My point
maybe
is, it
not.
Just doesn't, for me, you're rohu about this, it doesn't seem that bad. Like he's LeBron James. He's got a long basketball schedule. He's one of the greatest players ever. He's allowed to be a goof, you know?
It's disrespectful.
Mate, if I was in the NBA, I would be like, I'd be like suiting up in my silkiest warm-ups and doing body slides during the timeouts across the court.
Yeah, you'd be out of the league in days.
You can't kick LeBron James out of the league.
Okay, so the Jazz... I'm watching it now. The Jazz were on...
Give us some facts, Paul. Use your words.
Sorry, this is chaos. it's absolute chaos.
Sounds like you're witnessing like a train
loud
crash
in my
or
ears.
Something.
How do I mute one tab?
Paul, this is terrible podcasting.
Okay, the Jazz are on offense. There's a block. He walks out onto the court. He's approximately 3 to 4 meters out on the court. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for you to say something.
Yeah, okay. So he did this long Instagram post where he starts, imagine doing your job at the highest level to where you're not needed anymore. Giving your shoes to a little girl and boy who you inspire and hoped you made proud that night. Mm. Then cheering on your teammates because you love seeing them succeed more than yourself, only to be criticized while doing it. People, it's the world we live in. And you can't let it ever stop you from your purpose in life. Negativity, bad energy, hate, envy, etc. will try to bring you down throughout your journey. And it's up to you on how you handle it. I handle it by simply saying thank you with a smile on my face and continue to push forward while doing it. Live, love, love. Hmm. Prayer emoji, heart emoji. Crown emoji.
You're right. That does sound very... Lee Ellis described it as David Brentian, and I think that's pretty good. it doesn't sound great, but at the same time...
Okay. Get off the court. It's fine to get subbed out for doing your job at the highest level and getting a break, but then wait until the game's over, take your shoes off, give them to a kid, and then there's no issues.
Okay.
Why would you do
it before
then?
Everyone's in the wrong here. LeBron's in the wrong, and he overreacted. But I don't think it's that bad. I was like, if it was me, because we've all been in the situation, though, where you're doing something that's not that bad, and someone overreacts the other way. It happens a lot in sports because there's the tension of winning and losing. Like clearly LeBron was being too silly, but like... the Denver commentator maybe shouldn't have been as harsh on him.
Utah.
And then LeBron...
He wasn't that harsh. He was just like, that's disrespectful.
Yeah.
I think he called it.
I mean, it's a stupid basketball game. I mean, who cares what he does? But then LeBron obviously overreacted as well. But it's funny he didn't go harder. Like, he was quite nice about it. I mean, it was cheesy and kind of lame. But that's how LeBron is. But if it was me, I would have gone, mother effer, I'm LeBron James. Lick my ass. I'm going to dunk on you, mother effers, 24/7, and then throw my shoes at you in disrespect. I'm the king. King out. I don't know. Like, yeah, I think LeBron is amazingly restrained for who he is. It's weird that he would respond to this criticism, which is pretty mild, when, you know, he's been criticized for a lot of stuff in his career. And it's weird he doesn't respond to other things. I mean, a lot of people have lost a lot of respect for him with his comments about China and Hong Kong. But it's weird that this is the time where he bites of all the, you know, because he manages to ignore most of the BS. And again, it's like Kyle Lowry. It's like, LeBron, you get criticized over tiny stuff all the time. It's weird that this has triggered you. But I guess we're all human, and just sometimes you get caught at a moment of weakness, and it's a bit embarrassing.
Okay, second scandal. Chris Paul, OKC versus Minnesota. Did you see the end of the game?
It was crazy.
Crazy. Who's that guy? What's that guy's name who used to play for the Warriors and now plays for the Timberwolves? He was drafted about 2 years ago, and it was a deal at the time that the Bulls traded him for cash consideration.
Yeah, sorry, man. I can't help you.
What's his name? Anyway, he's really annoying. He annoyed me when he was on the Warriors because I felt like he thought he was much better than he was. And anyway,
he walks out with his shirt untucked, yeah.
Yes, and gave up 1 point, and then...
Well, Chris Paul, sad. I mean, I know he's fighting for a win and stuff like that, and people are like, savvy veteran move.
And they got the
move.
Win.
But it could...
veteran move.
It could also be, funny, though, it's kind of embarrassing that this is what he's doing now. Like, complaining about guys with their shirts untucked. He was tucking his shirt in. It's like the most obscure Scott Foster bullshit is what this is. Like,
What I'll say is, I was fine with him doing, like, calling it out there.
No.
I don't like when there's rules and they don't get followed. Like, I hate guys shooting free throws and jumping over the free throw.
Yeah, lane violations happen every free throw. Like, it's...
I know.
There's got to be a bit of common sense. A good example that mirrors this, I think, is the James Harden dunk that went in, went round the net and then popped out. And if the rule is that's a made basket or the refs have any question whatsoever, you need to review that. I know that's not a reviewable thing, did the ball go through the net or not, but there should just be like a level of common sense in the ref going, hey, I'm going to risk my career here and I'm just going to review this just because I think that ball might have gone in and it could be decisive. I'm going to risk my career here and give that guy a warning for not tucking in his shirt and not penalize him for it. Like, this is ridiculous. Like,
no, I think penalize him for it.
It's unbelievable. Like, it's rules pathetic.
And they should be followed.
Yeah, but once you get that pedantic, Paul, you start calling every little, like, imagine the number of games that have probably been decided where the inbounder probably has his foot on. You know, when Jordan makes his buzzer beater over Elo against Cleveland, that legendary moment Jordan fires, the inbounder probably had his toe on the line inbounding, and it probably should have been a line violation. Like, if you start calling every little thing in sports, like, that has no consequence on the game whatsoever, you fall apart.
This had huge consequence because then...
No, but his shirt being untucked didn't have any consequence on the game. You're right, him getting a technical for it and giving up a point and costing his team the game did have an effect.
That's set up for, because you were saying, like, the issue is it could take away these dramatic moments, but this one actually gave a dramatic moment.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, that's a good point. But, like, all I'm saying is you would hate for the NBA. Imagine if they started reviewing Kawhi Leonard's three over Game 7, 76ers last year, one of the greatest shots in playoff history. Imagine if they looked at it and found out that the back of his New Balance shoe was a millimeter over the side out of bound line before they launched that shot. They had, like, heat-seeking technology that was able to, like, perfectly pinpoint where his shoe was, and they're like, he's a millimeter over line, so he's out of bounds. You know, like... I don't know, if you start just calling ridiculous stuff, I mean, imagine if a player got a suspension because they were wearing, like, Kyrie's been wearing the wrong socks in games. You heard about Kyrie's socks?
No.
Yeah. Kyrie started wearing like some old NBA socks where he was drawing the Nike tick on himself with a twink or something like that. Yeah, it's quite funny.
Yeah, well, that should be suspension.
Like, this is what I'm talking about. James Harden rolls his socks over to hide the Nike ticks because he's sponsored by Adidas. Like, are you gonna give him a technical foul for rolling his socks over? Like, I don't know.
No, you can't do that.
Tiny uniform violations should not decide games. And while I'm glad this led to an exciting finish and overtime, it's like you can't call a shirt untouched violation unless he's calling it. It's crazy.
What I will say is that Chris Paul then complained about it the next night when his team got called for it. And he was like, he's just trying to make a point.
Oh, what? So Chris Paul's team got called for shirt untuckness?
Yeah, like yesterday.
Oh, my God.
And he was complaining. And
this is Chris Paul's life now. Man, I hope he gets traded. On last week's podcast, did I suggest that he should get traded to the Jazz?
I don't remember that.
That's a good take, though. I might have had that with my hairdresser. I forget what's a podcast and what's a chat with my hairdresser.
Mike Conley needs to get better. It's crazy.
It's not just him, though. It's Joe Ingles, Donovan Mitchell. Like, yeah, their whole team is underperforming. Maybe. And no one can understand why. It really interests me. But my thought would be, if Utah could make a crazy trade Chris Paul for Mike Conley, or trade Mike Conley for Russell Westbrook, like, you may as well try it, because, like, this is their year to do stuff. It's like a few of these teams, like Houston as well. It's like Houston is kind of a little bit sad that Russell Westbrook just literally can't shoot. And I know.
But they knew that when they got him.
I know, but he's worse than what they expected. And okay, like, if he doesn't improve, you've got what?
I thought it was a weird move at the time.
No. Everyone did, but everyone's like, Russell Westbrook has shot okay in the past. Surely he will improve, but instead he's gone the other way. And it's like, these teams, like, this year is for the taking, right? The best team at the moment is the Lakers. They don't look that good. The Bucks don't look that good. Like, any team could win. And I'm like, man,
the Bucks do look weird.
The Jazz, this was supposed to, they're not that good, though. They're not like the Raptors last year or the Warriors last
year. They
looked
awesome when they played the Magic.
They're not, yeah. Paul, every team looks awesome when they play the Magic.
Not true.
Okay.
Not true.
Who doesn't look awesome against the Magic? The Suns.
Teams are struggling to put up points.
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
If we crack 100, we win, basically.
That's a big if. Okay. We'll get to the Magic Mayhem soon. But the point is that Utah and Houston are two teams that were like, Nuggets as well. Nuggets have still got, maybe not this year's not their year, and they're still developing, and they've got to get Jokic on a treadmill. But this is like the opportunity for the Jazz. The Houston Rockets are like, they're getting older every year. Like, it's now or never. It's like, I mean, I'm excited for December 15th when the trade deadline, the trade window opens or whatever it's called. But like, a few teams, like, if you're going to do something crazy, and they've already done, like, trading for Westbrook was already quite a crazy thing to do. But if you're going to do something crazy, do it now. And if you could move Conley for Westbrook
Conley was supposed to be the big thing.
Yes.
And he's just not playing well.
It's backfired badly. I mean, looking at now, Conley looks... Well, everyone knew he was overpaid, but they paid him because they wanted to keep him in Memphis and stuff like that. But he's old, and he played in a system in Memphis where it was all about him, and now it's not all about him. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Donovan Mitchell got injured... Like, maybe Conley comes right when the offense is more built around him. But right now, it's like, he's not a good enough shooter. He's not a good enough, like, fitting into a team role. And maybe Chris Paul's better at that. And their money probably matches. Pull the trigger. I don't know if that's possible, but do it. Same with Rockets. It's like, Rockets, this is your year. If you don't do it now...
To get Chris Paul.
Now, I don't know if Chris Paul's the fix, but to be honest, you got to look at it and go, last year, if they'd run back their team from last year that, like, was decent, like, I mean, they had a pretty disappointing playoffs, but, like, was decent, you've got to...
Are you suggesting they bring him back?
Well, no, not really.
I think the reason they got rid of him was because maybe James Harden soured
that,
on
No, that supposedly. Was this crazy rumor from, was it Mark Spears or someone at ESPN?
Yeah, but it kind of makes sense. Like, why else would they do that?
No, but that's just pure speculation, man. Like, he honestly goes,
He said he ran over.
Yeah, he goes, but he also said, I listened to the podcast, he's like, I haven't watched the game, but I've heard. And it's like, at least, if you're going to make this huge call, that what you're claiming is that James Harden was during, in front of millions of cameras and millions of cell phones, in a major NBA game that thousands of people, millions of people around the world are watching, he's going to literally ask for a trade of his co-captain. You know, this is madness. And like,
they claimed he covered the microphone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. D'Antoni was mic'd at the same time, which is also ridiculous because NBA teams just cut out all the good bits from those mic segments. Like, if that wasn't there, like, obviously, like, ESPN would cut it before.
That would be really funny if they're like, it's time for Mic'd Up with Mike D'Antoni. And it's all, like, real vague. Him being like, we need to keep pushing.
We've got
to
play D.
We got to play D. He's got to go, coach. We got to trade Chris Paul. Keep moving the ball.
Back to James Harden, and he's like, I've got a trade. Russell Westbrook, I used to play with him OKC. He's my boy. He's a great player, and he's going to shoot better next year. We'll do a trade for him in the offseason. It's going to be perfect, coach. Believe me. And that was mic'd up on ESPN.
What other big stories? Dave Fizdale out as the New York Knicks coach.
I don't even want to talk about the Knicks. So I desperately think, and this is getting into my guy I've been thinking, but let's get in there now. I definitely, and I said this last year, but it was a great idea. We need relegation.
You bring this up every second episode.
Yeah. there's too many bad teams. The way the NBA is now, there's 10 contenders, 10 teams in the middle who are bad to floating around in no man's land. You know, that's the magic territory. And then there's the 10 bottom who are just... Or except for maybe the Kings, who maybe have a bit of a bright future, every other team is just like so bad and going nowhere, and just so like they've got problems. If you look at a team like the Bulls, they've got problems at every level. Like their personnel is bad and underperforming. Their coaching staff is bad and needs to be fired. And their GM and front office is shocking. What, you disagree that the Bulls are bad and underperforming?
No, I think they're underperforming, but I think their roster isn't terrible, and they should be doing way better. They should be a playoff team in the East.
But all their players are like Lauri Markkanen is bad, Zvit Levine, like they're just like they're supposed to be good and they're bad, right?
Yeah, but I think the coach is shocking.
Yeah, but we've been saying this about these teams for like 20 years. The front office is shocking too.
Well, he's only coaching them.
And that's what I'm saying. I was just like, if we had relegation, it would fix so many of the NBA problems.
What about this? I've just had an idea.
Yeah, throw it out.
What if owners can get their teams taken from them? They get forced to sell, aka like a Donald Sterling thing.
Yeah.
If your team doesn't like cross a certain level in time.
That's relegation. Know? That's exactly what you've described.
No, it's not relegation. The team stays, but the owner has to sell. So James Dolan, if the Knicks are like, say if they were like this was like his last chance, and if they were bad this year, he's forced to sell the team.
The Knicks, you know, the Knicks would still be a valuable team even if they went to the G League.
I don't think so.
They would still play in Madison Square Garden, a stadium they owned, and they would just acquire players and sign as many players as they could so they could play their way up next year, just like they do in English football.
What players are they getting?
They're like New York Knicks. They can get
Glenn Rice Jr.
No, they can get every player. That's an obscure New Zealand basketball reference because he's been playing for the Breakers. He's a troubled...
I was just trying to think of a player who's not NBA
Okay. You could sign.
Make a G League
any player
roster.
From the G League. You could sign any player from the NBA.
Not true.
Assuming they got the money.
You can't just take players from other teams.
Okay, think about. Yes, you can. You definitely can. Like you could have.
What if they're on contracts?
You could trade for them. Like people would come and play for the Knicks. Imagine I'm just trying to think of a player who's like underpaid at the moment, who famously, imagine Patrick Beverley. I think he got paid this summer, but Patrick Beverley, famous for years, was making a tiny amount of money relative to how valuable he was as like a starting or like six man type point guard. You could just recruit Patrick Beverley and go, we'll pay you $3 million more dollars than what you're getting wherever you're at.
You can't pay someone in the G League $3 million more than an NBA contract.
Well, you'd have to. You're like playing. You're assuming we're going on existing rules. You would do it. You would have to arrange it in such a way that an NBA team that went down could still pay heaps of money and fight their way up. But here's the thing: the other a billionaire could start a team in Seattle that could also pay, you know, the salary cap would be the same, could also pay to start a team that the Knicks would have to compete with down in the G League to fight for one of the three spots of going up into the NBA.
Yeah, okay.
It's ridiculous. It would never happen, but it's needed because there needs to be a punishment. At the moment, teams like the Knicks, the Cavs are pathetic. And remember, the only reason the Cavs have been good is because they were bailed out, possibly by a rigged draft, to get LeBron to be. I'm not going to say it's rigged. That's maybe too far. But like, it's suspicious.
No, I am.
It's suspicious that LeBron got picked first by his hometown team. LeBron bailed them out massively, and then when he left and crushed them, as he should have, because they're awful. When he crushed them, they got bailed out by two first round picks again. And it's like, if they get another first round pick, it's unacceptable. And the only reason that crap
actually more like three first round picks, basically.
Oh, three. Number one specifically picks.
Kyrie, Anthony Bennett, Andrew Wiggins.
And like these teams, like just they need to be punished for being for the bullshit they're doing. And there's a number of teams like that I think they need to be slapped. And the way to slap them is to send them down a league. The Knicks, as I'm saying, if they got relegated for a year, they would go down. They would still pay millions of dollars. They would attract developed players from Europe, developed players from the G League, build towards, trying to win the G League or whatever qualifies you automatically to go up, or beating an NBA team at the end of the season. You'd have to beat who's a team at the bottom now, but wouldn't get relegated, like not a bottom three team. You'd have to beat the Bulls or something like that, which is, you know, 7-game series. Imagine how good that would be. Imagine the Knicks, who were relegated the year before, playing the Bulls in a 7-game series to see who stays in the NBA. Like, that would be, like, bigger than the NBA Finals in some ways. Like, honestly,
the Warriors would have to go down this year.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the Warriors are a perfect example. Like, don't get me wrong.
I disagree.
No. Don't get me wrong. The Warriors have been a great, well-run franchise who have done great things, created a great team, and one of the greatest teams of all time, and had unprecedented success. But then this year, they shouldn't be allowed to tank so they can just re-up next year. Get rewarded for failure.
Like, their tanking is pretty... I don't think they... wanted to do.
NBA ratings are down, and it's literally because the Warriors are playing every like nationally televised game, and they are terrible. They're one of the worst teams, probably the worst team. And there needs to be some sort of dispensation because they've had a lot of injury. They've paid all their money to four players, and those four players, including D'Angelo Russell, have been injured like pretty much the whole season, so they're doomed. But you still should have to be competitive and put a competitive team on the floor. And if that's not the case, then they need to trade one of their... Like, they should have to be forced to trade Clay.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Who's a valuable trade piece right now for maybe three serviceable players to get your team up out of the relegation zone. That's just the harsh reality
of professional
sports. It's competition.
I don't hate it.
Thank you.
And because I do like the relegation system in like British football.
And the crazy thing is, though, because that's what happens as well, like teams like Newcastle, who are huge teams, they go down and then they are too good for the second league and they come straight up. The hilarious thing, though, is that when teams go down, or it's also tragic, and then go down again, like... They made that Sunderland Till I Die documentary about the Sunderland Football Club, and it was supposed to be about their redemption story of making it back up to the Premier League, and instead it was a story of them going the other way. Spoiler alert! there's something about relegation, and I'm just the reason I bring this up, and I guess this ties into the week in review, is because people are talking about a play-in tournament. And while I was for the idea when people were talking about it, Adam Silver, and I don't think they're seriously considering it, but Adam Silver did mention it being considered, I think just to spark up the podcasters, for a few boring weeks while the schedule's a bit weak before they get to the Christmas Day bonanzas and the NBA kicks on again. A play-in tournament, now that I hear about it, I liked the idea. I think is awful. Like, how do you incentivize it? Like, players aren't really going to pay. Like, you're like, it's $1 million prize money. Well, the players aren't really going to pay for their share of, you know.
What are they? Who's playing? I don't understand anything.
The rumor is Adam Silver said that there was a, they were considering a play in like some sort of tournament in the middle of the year, whether it qualifies for money or for home playoff advantage, or I don't know. There's just, they want to make a tournament in the middle of the year to energize the league, and I mean that's pathetic, because what you're doing, if you're suggesting that's an option, is saying that your product, an 82 game season, isn't exciting enough, and you need to put in another product to try and zhuzh it up. Why don't you add a 3-on-3 tournament? Actually, that sounds like a really good idea. I'd actually like to see that, like a street ball type comp to see which team's got the best street kind of offensive. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is that, like, you're saying, you're admitting that the product is broken, which I think we all agree it kind of is a little bit broken. So it needs to be zhuzhed up, and relegation is a way to do it, because all of a sudden, all those crappy games that... Because every day you see games, and you're like, I'm not going to watch 76ers versus Bulls. I'm not going to watch Milwaukee versus Knicks, because there's just no point. You're like, especially the blowouts this year have been so big. It's like 50-point games and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you fix that? And I'm like, relegation, and meaning that the Knicks, every game, are fighting for their survival. And if they beat Milwaukee on an upset, they're like celebrating like it's the greatest day of their lives, because it means they're
raise the stakes.
Yeah, it really creating a floor as opposed to...
It would be cool to see like the main Red Claws like get up.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. The problem
you
is...
You run me over and I'm on board, as long as they can pay higher salaries.
You'd have to make the salary cap in the G League the same as the NBA or close to. There's a lot of problems, and the problem is there's so many billionaires in the world now that like it become like British soccer teams have become just billionaires just buy these teams for a bit of fun, and they're like, let's see what we can do with
it. I was reading that the owners of PSG, one of my football teams, is buying Leeds, and I was like, okay, well, Leeds is gonna like in a few years be probably like back in, you know, back on the rise.
Yeah.
Like Leeds United used to be like a dominant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dominant team.
There's heaps like that. Sunderland was like that. There's a whole lot of football teams in there that used to be.
I'd love
good.
To see like a line graph of like all the teams, like rising and falling and stuff, you know? And you'd see like teams that were like nothing coming up and stuff.
Well, a lot of it has to do with, yeah, like just money. And it's like some of the teams teams that have oil money behind them or just big glamour teams. And the teams that have gone down are often like Sunderland is a former like industrial city that has like fallen on tough economic times. So like they just don't have the money, or no one wants to own a team from Sunderland. Like it's kind of sad, but like it just comes down to money. And you'd have to, the relegation idea takes a lot more thinking out. Like you'd really need... To stop people from just starting like the Idaho Potatoes and just like launching them in, you'd have to really think about like how it was, like maybe you limit the entire pool of teams that can go up and down to 60 or something like that. This is never going to happen, by the way. It's just a hypothetical. The reason it'll never happen is because the NBA is owned by the owners, and the 30 teams just want to protect their assets, and they like the idea that no matter how bad the Phoenix Suns are, they can't get worse than $1 billion. Whereas if they could get relegated, they could. My point with the Knicks was that if the Knicks went down next year, they would still probably sell out a whole, like, still sell well, because they're still a basketball team in the heart of New York City. They still own the stadium.
No,
you got to remember that, like, half the Knicks ticket sales at the moment are
tourists.
And so the tourists would still come. They wouldn't notice that they're playing the Raptors G League team. Yeah, honestly. After 2 years or 3 years down there, no. Plus, the true fans would go because you'd lower your ticket prices, and you'd go because you'd want to support your team passionately to see them get into the championship.
The Knicks are crazy because like I go to Nets games instead because they're literally like less than half the price.
Yeah,
and that's insane because it's like there's no way, like, you know, the Nets are at least a playoff team.
Okay, well, speaking of playoff teams, it's that time, right about that time for the Stars to roll on out. The on ball! Sit down. The on ball! I used to be jealous of Mary Apollo. Juice!
You're taking every game personal?
I'm about to sit down. Wow!
That is pure magic. Pure magic.
The boys are back in town, baby.
Yeah, they've had a good week, right?
Yeah. The thing is like, I was thinking how we've just got to win the games that we should win. Like, you know...
Yeah,
you might occasionally get an upset.
In the Eastern Conference, that's how you make the playoffs. And you've got a lot of bad teams.
Yes, and we had a three games in a row, Washington, Phoenix, Cleveland. And I was like, I could maybe see us dropping one of them. But they just got the job done and won all three. We're on a four-game winning streak now. Our Golden State before that as well. It was a really cruisy stretch. But still, we've won five of the last four, all against pretty bad teams. But...
take it, man.
You know, the boys were clinical. We've been making shots, which is great, because to start the season, we just couldn't make shots at all. So, yeah, it's been a good week. We've got a hard stretch now of Milwaukee, Lakers, Rockets.
Ooh.
So the streak could come to an end. And Milwaukee is weirdly a real bogey team, I think, for us. Like, they look so good when they play.
They are very good. They're one of the favorites to win the championship.
But I think even especially against us, they just seem like it's...
will beat us.
Crazy how good they seem. Like,
so, yeah, maybe they match up well.
Yeah, I think they do. Because I think maybe the more kind of outside shooting you have against the Magic really helps. Because we've got a lot of long guys in the paint or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're
they've also probably got more long guys than you. So it's like kind of like double.
That's the thing. That's probably is actually partly kryptonite, because the Milwaukee Bucks were built by our GM, John Hammond.
Oh.
He built the Bucks before he came to Orlando. Obviously, there's like been a few things he didn't do. Like, I think Brook Lopez came after he left. Obviously, Brogdon's left.
Wait, what did he do? Did he sign Matthew Dellavedova to that great contract?
Who? Hammond?
Yeah.
Hammond did a lot. Drafted Giannis, drafted Brogdon.
So, but then signed Dellavedova, signed... who was that guy they invested in for a long time?
Like, signed Dellavedova, maybe.
Was he? Well, no, because the interesting thing about the Bucks is that, like, for a few years there, they were their GM and like the organization seemed terrible, right? Like, they signed they stole Jason Kidd as the head coach, and you know,
that was weird.
We're really poorly organized, and then last year they like whoever stepped in there nailed it. And I'm like, my point is, was the Magic guy the bad guy before they fixed it last year?
He did a great job. No, I think Jason Kidd.
That was an ownership decision.
Thing was weird. But yeah, I think it was maybe an ownership decision.
But he was friends with the owners or something like that, and he talked his way into it or something weird. Was he also the GM for a bit? Like, it was so funny.
Jason Kidd, nah.
He had a lot of power. That's why he went there, right? Like, he wanted like decisions over player personnel in, where was he? New York or New Jersey? New York.
He was in Jersey.
Jersey, yeah. And he wanted
well,
that
Brooklyn.
Control.
He was in Brooklyn.
And they got rid of him. I forgot that team moved. It's a really interesting experiment where the Magic, it's a real interesting question, the Magic and the Wizards are both Eastern Conference teams who have shown, like, would you rather put
Magic
all your stock...
Well.
What?
Sorcery. They're both, like, sorcery-based.
Yeah, teams. Would you rather be a 9 on defense and a 1 on offense... Or a 1 on offense and a 9 on defense. And I think the Magic have proven that you'd rather be good at defense.
Yeah, I thought that when they played as well. Because the Wizards are crazy. Like, they're cash money. But man, they don't play any defense.
Yeah.
Like, there's times where you're just like, what the heck? But then you'll score on them. And then they'll score within 5 seconds. Like, they'll just score it back.
I think Rui Hachimura is a really interesting case study. I think he's the new Adam Morrison. It's really interesting, but like every year, the internet gets swept up in a player who's not actually that good, but like puts up a few stat lines and stuff like that, and looks quite exciting.
I don't think he really did.
What?
I don't think his college stats were that good. I think he's going to be good.
So Hachimura, I think, is the new. It's hard to find a person to compare him to. Maybe like Michael Carter Williams or.
No, I think you're crazy.
Who's like
I think
a?
He's really jumped out as
Tyreek Evans. It's like a rookie who like looks promising, but is actually not a good player. Like, who's going to build their team? Michael Porter Jr. And this is he's because of injury, not because of talent. But like, it's really interesting if you're a score first offensive player, who can't really play defense, like if the team's not built around you or built around you scoring, and the Wizards aren't built around him, but they're built around, you know, just everyone just attacking the hoop at all times and not playing any defense, it kind of really distorts the player. And I think I'm coming out and saying it. I realize it's a controversial take, but I think Hashimura is fool's gold. And it's like, who's going to give him on a good team, like, you know, 20 shots a game, and he's going to need that to be effective. So I don't know. I have no
thoughts. I think eventually he's going to be like a centerpiece franchise player.
Wow. You've gone in deep there.
Yeah, I really like him. And I just remember watching him play for Japan and beating Australian Boomers team that was pretty stacked with NBA talent.
Yeah.
And him just carrying this Japan team to a win. And
yeah,
he was like 19 at the time.
I mean, the NBA is littered with carcasses of like Dion Waiters or Hassan Whiteside, or that's not the one I'm looking for. Who's the guy? Who's born ready?
Lance Stevenson.
Like, just gunner scorers who you're like, damn, this guy's the next.
I don't think
Bryant.
Hachimura is being like a gunner scorer.
He had for a rookie. He has. You got to remember, he's a rookie.
Yeah, I guess.
That's what does he do besides scoring? Can't shoot. Can't play D. Not a passer.
I don't know. I haven't gunner seen scorer. Enough of him, but I'm high on him.
Yeah.
I think he's got a good build. He's going to be
he's got a great build. Oh, and great guy as well. And the people's champ. Like, he's going to be the Twitter and Reddit champ. But I'm like, he's going to be the Twitter and Reddit champ playing in Japan in like 3 years' time. Maybe that's too harsh.
I disagree.
Too negative. Okay.
I'm high on him.
I'm
also high on Darvis Bertans. He's falling out.
No. You got to remember that this is a Wizards team that's putting up like 140 points a game. Like, someone's got to be.
Yeah, and he's scoring like 30.
Yeah.
He's crazy.
Yeah.
In his last three games, he's hit 6 threes, 5 threes,
Paul,
7 threes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good point. There's always a role for that person. And plus, everyone wants to stretch four, whatever the hell he is.
Yeah.
But I think the stats this year, man, I'm really struggling there, eh? You know how the stat today is that Doncic has passed Michael Jordan for 25-5. It's like, it's not comparable at all. I'm not offended by that or anything like that, but I'm like, because LeBron for the last 20 years has been breaking everyone's stat line. And don't get me wrong, I guess I've come to the conclusion that LeBron's one of the greatest of all time, and Doncic is definitely on that track as well. But like, these crazy stat lines they're putting out, it's like, just averaging 30 points a game. Russell Westbrook is, in these terrible games he's playing, is still putting up triple doubles. Like, it's just not. Stats have really gone haywire, and I just don't think you can read into them at all. When, you know, they're like Harden's averaging more than Jordan was in 86 or whatever, but Jordan was doing it without shooting any threes. Like, it's like.
Yeah.
It's mental.
I just clicked the other day, like, because the Magic are, I think, maybe like one of the slowest paces.
Yeah, boy.
And I was always kind of thinking, like, why is that? Like, we have a lot of athleticism, and like, I think we look good when we fast break. Like, Markel Fultz on the fast break is pretty unstoppable.
Yeah.
Aaron Gordon, when he doesn't commit a charge, is pretty unstoppable. Terrence Ross, you know, we've got a lot of speed and athleticism. Jonathan Isaac on the fast break, awesome.
Oh, it's all that Fultz has got, speed.
No. But what I will say is, I clipped the other day, and I was like, oh, well, when you're like a defensive team, like obviously just going slow, like limiting how many possessions there are.
Yeah.
You know, it's huge. So it does make sense. But it is like still fast break if it's on, but then if it's not, really take your time.
So the weird thing is they're just not good at taking their time away, but you can,
Here's the thing. It's time for Player of the Week.
Okay.
For Magic Mayhem.
Player of the week.
I've actually gone a joint winners, Aaron Gordon and Terrence Ross, who have both, like, because I wanted to give it to Terrence Ross because he's been awesome. He's finally.
But then I also want to give it to Aaron Gordon because he's been awesome.
Yeah, Terrence Ross has finally come into his usual self, and people were saying, you know, contract year or whatever last year, so he was playing well, but he's just not a guy. He's a guy who plays to win. Great. Great.
If he plays to win, he hasn't been doing a good job of it.
No, great, you know, character, high character player.
Yeah.
Plays to win. Great team guy.
Real hard worker.
So I just wasn't buying into that at all.
Real locker room presence.
His shot's going to come.
Real lunch pail kid. Shows up to work every day, does his work, goes home.
Terrence Ross, yeah.
has a life insurance policy, so his family's looked after if he dies.
Yeah.
Grit and grind.
Human torch.
All day, every day. Hard work never stops. People don't see. Anyway. People only see the tip of the iceberg. They don't see the hard work that's under it, which is the most of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Follow your dreams.
That's the part of the iceberg that does a lot of the damage to the Titanic.
Yeah.
Because they thought it was quite a small iceberg.
They laughed at it.
It's actually massive under there.
Why didn't they build the airtight walls up to the top of the ship, though, eh? Idiots.
Yeah, idiots. But also, I think it ripped multiple compartments.
It did. But you still build the walls up to the top to keep some air trapped in the ship. Like, it's ridiculous.
Oh, they made a lot of mistakes at that time. But Aaron Gordon absolutely balled out, especially against Phoenix, where he shot 86%, 5 3-pointers, 32 points. I will say this about Aaron Gordon. He's been probably our most frustrating player this year in terms of
and
just
of last
shooting
year
weird.
And the year before that as well.
No, shooting weird. His shot selection's been bad this year. He's weirdly shooting a lot of turnaround, fadeaway jumpers, a lot of off-the-dribble pull-up two-pointers. Like, and it's just not what his game is. His game is cutting, throwing down dunks. He shouldn't be trying to create jump shots with the ball in his hand, I don't think.
Yeah.
He's been doing a lot of that. But anyway, it was nice to see him just explode and kill. Because Phoenix, this is how the Phoenix game happened. The game began, and at the end of the first quarter, if you'd called me, then I would have told you the Phoenix Suns are the greatest basketball team I've ever seen. They were unreal, but they just couldn't miss.
Yeah.
And they looked awesome, and I was like, man, we're in trouble. There's no way we're going to beat this team. And then luckily, it kind of reversed, and we caught fire, and Aaron Gordon shot 86% for 32 points. But it was a quite an unreal game.
Aaron Gordon also got one of the dunks of the week, where he did a real casual, 360 almost in traffic the other day.
Yeah.
Are you a little bit it's amazing how I managed to spin everything negative, but are you a little bit, when he came into the league and when I was advocating last year, I was like, they should sign to a max because, or whatever he wants, unfortunately, because not that I think he's worth that, but because the Magic just can't lose any more talent that they've developed and have him go and thrive at another team. But my other reason being, like, even if he's not good, the Magic are not going anywhere. It's not like they're going to be a contender. It's not like they have to worry about overpaying him now. But even if he's not good, he's at least like a human highlight reel. But based on how good he is at dunking, which is probably one of the best dunk contest contestants ever, even though he hasn't won, he was a bit robbed.
He got robbed,
yeah. It's just weird that he isn't a better in-game dunker and doesn't put a bit more razzmatazz on his dunks, you know?
Yeah, I think he throws down some pretty nice dunks sometimes. He did a nice alley-oop the other day as well.
I think I really lean towards a Stromile Swift-type dunker. Like a guy who puts everything into it, like really yams it hard and like really has some swagger in his dunk. And Aaron Gordon almost seems to be the opposite. He seems to be like quite gentle. And like even that 360 in traffic, when you hear that, you're like, man, that must have been vicious. You'd never describe his dunk as vicious. It was like almost like mechanical or necessary. Like he was like, I need to do a 360 now to make sure I get around my defender. So he just does it and then just scores technically 2 points. But there's no kind of like razzmatazz on it if it was like a Kobe Bryant or someone else who might do a dunk like that, kind of, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think one thing I really like about him is that he knows his athleticism and he goes to dunk a lot. Like, there's times where you're like, you see him get it and you're like, there's no way is he going for a dunk? There's no way he's trying to dunk that.
Yeah,
and then he will go for it, and he'll often get fouled or whatever. But you know, he goes for some crazy dunks. I think at times, often gets fouled, but that's the way to get fouled. I think is to go hard and not try and beat around the bush. I don't know if that's the right.
Don't beat around the bush. We're running out of time. We've still got time for movie magic though. So you ready to do back to back segments?
Yeah.
Guy I've been thinking can wait, and I kind of like, I had a long rant about my relegation idea again, so we can kind of count that as Guy I've been thinking. Are you ready? And people, are you ready for movie magic? I've never heard this before. Paul, you've got a new sting to bring to the table.
Oh yeah, it's just a bit of music.
Let's hear it.
time for movie magic with me, Paul Ernst. I'm
putting you in the Wait, the music's still happening.
Yeah, I know. Okay, wow. But yeah, I'm going to have my voice maybe saying it like, hi, it's time for the magic of the movies with Paul.
I actually just a bit of music. I assumed you would have composed it, so I was like, man, Paul has nailed this. But obviously no. Disney sting or something. Where's it from?
It's from Universal Studios, Islands of Adventure.
Wow. Is it from like the theme, like the music they made for the theme park ambiance?
Yeah. It's not quite what I was after, but I was struggling to find what I was after. And I just found that just before we started recording.
So. Oh, it's pretty great, man. Okay.
Good, yeah.
So this is movie magic. I've got a complaint about movie magic. It's funny that magic is in the title of movie magic, and you might assume it's about movies about the magic, such as Kazam starring Shaq or Blue Chips starring Shaq.
I'm Like Mike starring, I think the magic probably feature in that.
I doubt it. I don't think there was.
I reckon they would.
Dirk Nowitzki, Steve Nash were in it. Anyway. I've got a bit of a complaint coming up later, but let's start with a bit of movie magic.
I actually realised I've been in London and I've been quite busy. I haven't really seen.
You've moved away from your movie scholarship or your movie subscription. That's a bit weird.
Yeah, and I have been quite busy.
Yeah. So what, you've been to no movies this week?
Yeah, kind of. Tracy McGrady is in Like Mike. I can confirm that.
No, you got some music for movie magic, but you didn't do the most fundamental part of movie magic, which is see a movie.
Correct, yeah.
This is unbelievable. Every other week, you did like two or three movies. Why don't you just save one of your movies from another week and just pretend you'd seen one this week? Like a basic professional. Like... It seems so easy. Like, you could have just lied to me right now and just told me a movie that you saw 3 weeks ago that I haven't seen.
I actually did go to the cinema, but it was the BFI, the British Film Institute, and it was an old movie from like...
You could have reviewed that. It's fine. There's no rules to this segment. You've just got to talk about a movie once a week. Well, I don't even want to do this segment. And
I'll do it then. Okay. The film I saw was The Philadelphia Story. No, I'm not talking about the story of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. I'm talking about the movie, The Philadelphia Story. Cary Grant, James Stewart, Katharine Hepburn.
Wow.
It's a hell of a film.
Hell of a cast.
Hell of a cast, yeah. It's actually a really good film. I saw it for the first time about 2 years ago, and I enjoyed it, but I almost enjoyed it more this time in the cinema.
Oh, yeah, everything's better in the cinema, right? It would be so good if they showed more classics in the cinema. We saw Pulp Fiction. It was awesome.
Yes, it's awesome going to the cinema for a classic.
Yeah, but so they should do it, but apparently big companies like Disney and stuff, they limit the ability to show them in cinema, and that's why it doesn't happen more often, because otherwise most of the cinema films would probably be classics, because you'd rather see that.
Like, remember what it was like at the start of DVDs, where there'd be like... or videos, and they'll be like, you can't show this in schools, prisons, or on oil rigs.
You must be so gutted when you're in an oil rig, eh? You're like, damn it! We've been on this effing oil rig for 3 years, and all we want to do is watch Pocahontas.
Yeah. Philadelphia Story is a great flick, worth checking out. Also, the James Bond trailer came out for... No Time to Die. I was into it.
Can you give rewind two steps. I'm also, the new Ghostbusters trailer looks intriguing as well. Rewind two steps. Philadelphia Story, roughly what is that about? I'm interested.
Okay. So Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn are a couple.
Yeah.
But they break up at the start of the film. Fast forward a couple years maybe. In fact, I think they were maybe engaged and they break up. Fast forward a couple years. And Katharine Hepburn is now getting married to a different man.
Oh, no.
But Cary Grant arrives back in town hearing this. He goes to some kind of gossip magazine, and he says, I'll get you into this wedding, because it's like a big wedding in Philadelphia between these like rich families, you know?
Yeah.
So he's like, I'll get you in if you pretend to be these friends and you can do a story. And they're kind of like, why would you do this? And he was like, revenge kind of thing. And so that's kind of the plot, is him and these two journalists are going in undercover, and it's like the wedding weekend or whatever of this high-profile Philadelphia couple. So in modern terms, I'm talking, you know, Ben Simmons and Kylie Jenner, or the Jenner that he supposedly dated or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, those two are getting married in Philly. And then, you know...
Good basketball analogy.
Kyle Lowry shows up, and he's like... Yeah. He's, like, taking the... ringer.
He's trying to sabotage the wedding.
In a way, yeah, but it's an interesting flick.
Is it
a flick that takes place over, like, a short amount of time, you know? This happens over, like...
2 hours.
No, like, 24 hours or something like that.
I'm really interested in, does it seem real dated now? You know how so many films, you're like, oh, it's a great romance, and then it turns out, like, looking at it now in 2019, it's just a dude gaslighting a woman for, like, 3 months.
No, I actually think a lot of the funny bits hold up. Like, I laughed out loud at bits. There's some funny bits that I think were almost probably ahead of their time in terms of comedy.
But no, but what about, like, just, like, the themes? Like, who was this?
I don't think it's problematic.
As a dude, you can't just show up to people's weddings and try and sabotage them so the girl will love you. Like, that's not allowed. That's legal.
There is a bit at the start when you show them breaking up, and he does kind of push Katharine Hepburn over in it. But it's
down
kind of
some
in a slapstick
stairs.
Comedy way, you know?
Oh, okay, all right.
It's not like a...
There's not enough domestic violence comedy these days, and they need to bring it back, I reckon.
Okay.
Nothing funnier. I'd be an asshole. You mentioned you saw the James Bond trailer. Now, James Bond is huge for you.
Big.
And he's back.
He's back, and Sam Mendes is gone, which I'm glad.
Was he the shit director ruining it?
Well, he did the last two, and a lot of people loved Skyfall. I didn't.
Skyfall was shit. That was the one where he got the old Austin Martin back, eh? That was shocking.
Yeah.
And then the one after that, what was the next one after that?
Well, people were high on Skyfall, hated Spectre. Out of those two, I probably preferred Spectre, to be honest.
I don't even think I watched Spectre. Can you give me a clue as to what was in Spectre? Just tell me, like, who's the bad guy? Is it a Scarface guy? Okay.
Christoph Waltz.
Is he in a car?
Plays the bad guy.
Oh, yeah. And
James Bond drives a car, yes. Oh, it's a car chase through Rome.
Oh, it's so bad. And there's that his Q is this young British guy who's like a...
Well, he's been that for the last few movies.
Who goes on a cell phone. Is that guy a stand-up? Like,
Paddington Bear.
Yeah. I'm really interested. I was like, hey, I'm a comedian. Imagine if they offered me that role. And I'm like, it's the worst role ever.
He's not a comedian. He's an actor.
Well, he should be a comedian because he's very unfunny. The point is, it's like his role needs to go. Like, you could rewrite James Bond. Like, you don't need a Q. Like, they had a legendary Q for years, and people used to be impressed by, like, exploding pens. People aren't impressed by that in a while. People don't want to see hacking or have that part of a story because it's boring. It's like they should just write out Q and do something else. Like, you can...
No, Q's a huge part of it. It's iconic. But the new film I'm excited about, new director, he directed... True Detective.
Season 1 or Season 2? Because that's a big if.
Season 1.
Okay, thank God.
And he directed the show Maniac that a lot of people liked. I thought it looked cool, but I lost interest after a couple of episodes. But, you know, he's kind of a younger director.
The old director, what did he direct?
Shawn Mendes.
Yeah.
He was like The Road to Perdition was his big one, I think.
Is that good? I got to watch that.
I don't know. I saw it too young, I think. But Daniel Craig is in that. Interesting. So
fascinating stuff.
I remember reading a story about Daniel Craig approaching him at a party and trying to convince him to direct the next James Bond. I thought it was kind of cool that Daniel Craig has like a lot of say in like stuff like
that. Are you glad Daniel Craig's still the James Bond?
Yeah, I am. I'm a big Daniel Craig fan. I'd say this is surely his probably last because he is getting on. And after the last one, he said he would rather slit his wrists than do another. The fact he's doing one is.
Makes it think that he failed his attempted suicide.
Yeah, possibly.
That's so good.
Well, maybe he's going to die in the film.
Did he honestly say, I'd rather slit my wrists than do another one?
I think it directs like verbatim. Is that verbatim? Like,
oh, that is so good. So good. Oh, okay. Amazing. And who do you want to replace him as James Bond?
I'd love to step up.
Yeah, you personally. Yeah. But, it seems like you're an outside shot.
It's really hard now, I think. Also, because of social media and stuff, you kind of start to really realize that, like, no one's very cool. So, like...
Yeah.
You know?
There's no mysterious person out there. Who recently did you think was cool that got shot down because, who did you find out on social media was not as cool as you thought they were?
I don't know.
Oh, you just,
like,
you just
like anyone's social media you go on and it's like,
this person's a loser.
Not cool.
Do you ever see someone's social media? Because I always worry about this. I'm like, I should just get off social media because I'm just embarrassing myself. I hate it. But it's a good promotional tool. Do you see anyone on social media and think that person's awesome on social media and you go out of your way to find them kind of thing?
Nah, I've never really had that.
Well, Siege on Twitter, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's cool. That's true.
At CEEJ, I was like, I want to be that guy's mate. He's a cool guy.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Yeah. Is that the end of movie magic?
Yeah, I reckon.
Because I've got a movie magic complaint.
Yeah.
Because I watched the trailer for a simple. What's that? Knives Out. And I watched
Knives
it.
Out, yeah, right.
It's also starring Daniel Craig. We should have a rule that every movie magic film talked about has to include Daniel Craig in some way. Would run out very quick, but it would be fun. Okay. So he's the lead character in Knives Out. And I watched the trailer.
Kind of.
He definitely is. I've got another complaint then. Okay. It was clearly, when I watched the trailer, a black comedy. And the trailer looked terrible because the jokes were so cheesy and stuff like that. But I was like, it's a comedy about a murder. It's a murder mystery, but there's a lot of jokes in it. And then I went and watched the movie, and then I listened to Movie Magic featuring Paul Williams on the Advanced Analytics podcast. And I go, it's a black comedy, right? Just trying to get more information out of you. And you said, no, it's not. And then I watched the movie. It was a black comedy. Like, there's so many jokes
seen the
in
movie.
It. What?
Well, I went there. I'd say someone made
I was cracking up. It wasn't that funny, but there was a lot of jokes. And there were some good ones.
Funny bits.
Yeah. But, it was a black comedy. It was a definition. Like, the first thing you describe it as is a black comedy. And this segment on Advanced Analytics Podcast led me astray and led the people of the world astray.
I think I would describe it as a detective film first. Like a true, not a true crime, but like a whodunit crime film first.
Yeah, but and a black
and then
comedy.
The comedy comes second to that, I guess.
But it's just a classic black comedy. It's like a man died, but it's not like real serious. It's like even the final hurrah is like, anyway, I don't want to spoil it in case people see it. But
so did you enjoy it?
I think it's like when I saw it, it had an 80 on Metacritic, which is like really high. So I'm like, this is going to be really good. I'd describe it. I'd put it in the where I put most films. It's like a great, entertaining, fine film. Not good, but like watch it, enjoy it, fine. Never talk about it again, kind of thing. Like watch it on a plane, it'd be the best time of your life. Watch it if you want to distract yourself for a night. Great time. But nothing to write home about, not at all memorable or special.
Wow, okay. Cutting.
Did you think it was a... No, well, I'm saying watch it, but
yeah,
don't...
I really enjoyed it. It's not in my top kind of three of the year, you know, but it'd be in...
What are your top three of the year again, just to remind me?
Marriage Story, number one. Number two, I'm going to probably say Parasite. Number three, I'm going to say... Probably
Frozen
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, or I was a big fan of Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah, okay. So Magic Story.
Marriage
Story. Sorry. Everything's magic based. Where do I see that? Like, what is that on Netflix? What is that?
I think it is actually coming out on Netflix any day now. I might be wrong, but I think it is. It is a Netflix
movie. What's it about? Give me a brief synopsis.
Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. One's a director, one's an actor. They're a couple.
It's crazy how hard you struggle. Is it a comedy? Is it a drama?
Well, I don't want to spoil too much. It's really funny. I laughed really hard at times.
Wow.
I cried at times. I felt all the emotions, really. Heck of a flick.
Okay.
It was a roller coaster.
I gotta check it out. Thanks.
I think you'll like it because there's some funny lawyers in it, and we both agree that lawyers are
funny. Lawyers are so good. All right.
We should wrap it up, though. It's getting quite late here.
Thanks to everyone who listened to the podcast. We love you from the bottom of our hearts. I've been Guy Williams.
I don't do that.
Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.